Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Are you at that stage in life where you've realized that you just cannot work forever? You've just realized that you need to save to be able to retire, and with horror, you also have come to the realization that your bank account is not cooperating. And also, you're just so tired with daily living that you're afraid you won't have the energy to make the life shifts to make financial independence a reality for you anytime soon. Well, I have good news. Today could change all that, because today we are all going to Money School. That's the name of the book that we're reading today, Money School: Become Financially Independent and Reclaim Your Life. My guest, Lacey Filipich, has written a book that she hopes will help all of us become financially independent. She is the award-winning author. She won for the best book category at the Money Awareness Achievement Award 2022 for her book, Money School. It's an extremely accessible book, and one that I think is extremely powerful as well. It could change your life. You could start to think of your life as pre-FI and post-FI, and FI means financial independence. So read this book and see what changes happen in your priorities, how you spend your money, how you spend your time. You could even change your daily routine and regain that sense of connection that you may feel is missing out in your pre-FI life. So to take us all on that journey from pre-FI to post-FI, let's meet Lacey, who has been saving half of every dollar since she was 10. Welcome, Lacey.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Michelle. It's great to be here.
Absolutely wonderful to speak with you. Are you still saving half of every dollar?
Yeah, it's 30 years later and I'm still doing it because it's just become a habit and it's part of my system now.
Wonderful. Still at it. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Let's get to know you, Lacey. How does a chemical engineer end up becoming a money expert and writing about money?
Yeah, I still wonder that myself sometimes. It's certainly not the career I expected to have. I chose engineering because I love problem solving. And now looking back, I can see so much alignment between how we manage our money and engineering, because it's all problem solving. So it kind of makes sense with that view. But while I was at school, you mentioned already, I started saving when I was young and I started investing when I was 19. I was in my second year of an engineering degree and everyone thought I was crazy, because I thought, why would you be getting a mortgage when you're 19 years old, Lacey? You're insane. But I had learned from my mum about money. She taught me. She was an accountant and I wanted to make the most of my money. So I knew I needed to save and start investing. And I just got started early, and I think of that as the ovarian lottery. My mother just was the person who taught me, and not everybody is lucky like that. We don't all get parents who know that stuff and take the time to teach it. So looking back, I know that's luck, but that's what ignited my excitement about money. And then, of course, as I was working, I was talking to lots of people who were earning really good money. I was working in the mining industry in Australia, which is a very lucrative industry to work in, and they were spending a lot of money and going into debt and getting things like car loans and credit cards. And I was going, what happened? Did you not have someone teach you? And that's when I started to realize that I had won that ovarian lottery. Not everyone else got that. And so I thought, I've got to do something about this, because it's not hard. It's pretty straightforward. It takes some discipline, but it's accessible for most people. And if you earn an income, being able to save and invest is within your reach. So that's why I set about establishing Money School 13 years ago. And I've been teaching people about money ever since.
Oh my gosh. And spreading the goodness of that ovarian lottery. Fantastic. Now, I wonder, you know, when we talk about financial independence, very often we hear of that model FIRE, right?
Yeah.
Your model has the acronyms FITR. Now, how is your model different from the FIRE model?
Well, interestingly, I didn't actually know about FIRE, the movement, until 2018, well after I'd gotten to that point. When I found it was like finding a community of people that I was like, oh, I really get these people. We have similar aims. But there was so much conflict about the retire early piece. People would be saying, but I don't want to retire early. I don't want to sit around and do nothing. I don't want to go on holidays forever. I want to keep working. And so there's lots of derivations that came out. There's things like Coast FIRE or Barista FIRE or Work Optional, all these little increments to help people find something they identified with. And the common factor was that everybody got to make a choice about how they spend their time. So I was looking for a term that was kind of unifying so that it didn't put people off. Because when I've spoken about FIRE to other people, I've seen people just write it off and go, it's not for me. I don't want to retire early. I love my job. And my point is, look, the FIRE bit, the FI bit, is for everybody. You can choose what you do with your time. So I think of it as time rich, which is quite an antidote for our common feeling of time poor in this life at the moment.
Absolutely. I mean, just yesterday I was speaking to someone who's 62 years old, millionaire, now into wafer fabrication, still running around every day, dumpster diving into his competitors, you know, trash, competitive advantage, that kind of thing. And I'm like, why do you work so hard? Why are you still working? And his answer is, I just love it. I love creating things. I don't want that to ever stop. Doesn't have to. But just exactly. Loves it. So this is about FITR. Could you remind us what that means again? Financially independent, time rich, right?
That's correct. Yeah. So the first bit's the really important bit, getting to that point of having enough assets. So you've saved some money, you've bought assets, which are going to give you an income. And as they produce an income, your reliance on your wage goes down because you don't have to trade your time for money. You're getting paid by your assets. And that's the bit that makes you financially independent, when you reach the point where the income from those assets is enough to meet your lifestyle requirements. And then that's the bit I think everyone can do.
I think a lot of people think, listen, I'd love to do that, but I look at my bank account and there's still not enough zeros in there to be able to reach that goal of FI. So is your model within the reach of the person with a tiny income?
It's a really important question. The fastest accelerator to getting to financial independence is your income. So the bigger your income, the quicker you're likely to get there if you follow the principles. So it's definitely an advantage. But we have seen lots of examples of people around the world who do it with small incomes. And I'm talking about having budgets for living costs of, in Australia, maybe about half of what the average person would live on. So they live what's called quite frugally. So you can do it that way. It might take you longer. It might take you 2 or 3 decades instead of taking 1 decade. You might never get there. That is a possibility. And I do think the point of what happens in the economy, which is completely beyond your control, gets missed a bit in the debate. If you've got bad timing, it's not your fault. If we have a big recession and your asset values go down and you don't reach that financial independence point when you wanted to, you tried. But I think the principles that you follow to get to financial independence put you in a better financial situation no matter what you do. So you may as well take the shot because you might get lucky. You might get a really booming economy. You might get a big pay increase. Something else might happen that just means, oh, wow, I can get there quicker. So why not try? And if you don't get there, oh, well, but you're still in a better financial situation anyway.
The trick seems to be get those assets, and you write beautifully about this, that sort of silently drip or flood income into your bank account. And I think a lot of people may not be clear on the sort of assets that can do that for them. For you, it was at age 19, property, right? Which really rings a bell with a lot of us here in Singapore who have grown up with the Asian ethos of buy property because that is your way to build your wealth. Can you share a little bit with us about the sort of assets that you started to accumulate? Was it property all the way?
Look, I have kept the properties I've bought. I've sold a couple, but property is a big part of my portfolio. But I also got interested in stocks or shares, depending on what your terminology is preferred. I think stocks is probably the more universal one. So buying stocks in companies or in baskets of companies, we call them exchange-traded funds. Australia, I assume it's the same. In Singapore. So that's been the basis of mine. And I would say my portfolio is about half and half now. I got into stocks a lot later. Well, 6 years later, that's not a lot later, is it? but I got into them later than I did with property because similarly, I mean, the quote that gets bandied around in my family is from Mark Twain, which is, buy land, they're not making it anymore. And so I think most people could relate to that. You know, it's something you can touch. It's tangible. We can see that people want to rent it. People will always need somewhere to live, a roof over their heads. But I have learned that I guess the value mechanisms that create that are different. So, you know, for land and for property, it's about scarcity in some ways and competition and everyone needing somewhere to live. With stocks, it's about human beings taking raw materials or time and turning them into more valuable products. that's what drives the value of the stock market going up. And those things aren't always at the same time. So I think having a variety is really important, but that doesn't mean you have to stick with one. So I've covered four assets in the book. So cash, which is legitimately an asset, it does earn interest. And some people who are really risk averse will prefer to have cash that just pays an interest. And then the three very common asset types that people would invest in to generate an income are bonds, stocks, and property. So I explore those in the book. But remember, it is a choose your own adventure story. You decide which ones you like. There's no absolute right or wrong. You don't have to pick one because, oh, well, I said you've got to get property. I'm not saying that. You pick the one that works for you, that makes the most sense and allows you to sleep well at night.
Yeah. What I liked about your book, and in case you've just joined us, listeners, I'm talking to Lacey Filipich, and she's the author of Money School. We're going to Money School today. It's a really terrific book. I like the idea that you introduce in this book that maybe we shouldn't be chasing money, that most of us are aiming for more money, but perhaps we can substitute that with the aim of leading with something else front of mind, and that is being time rich. So let me ask you, honestly, when did you stop leading life with more money at front of mind?
It was a pretty vivid memory for me in my second half of my 20s. I had three things happen to me in 18 months that made me question my desire to just chase a high income, which I think is pretty common. A lot of people come out of university. They want to make the most of their career. They want to see that income increase. I had really put a lot of time and energy into that. But I had those three things happen. One was I got burned out at work. So I'd worked too hard, 18 months with no breaks, working on weekends and evenings. And my body just said, enough. And I spent 5 weeks in bed. And that was really shocking. You know, you think you're invincible in your 20s. And I realized, oh, wow, I've got to look after myself a bit better. I'm not valuing my health. The second thing was my little sister sadly ended her own life. And she was 24. And that's a moment. Yeah, it's been so long that I can now, you know, reflect on it without getting really upset. But I think anyone, when you lose someone close to you, it makes you think about the value of your time, realizing that life is short and that we only get one shot. This is the only time you're going to be here. So you've got to make the most of it. And then the third thing that happened was I got promoted. I thought that was going to be a good thing, but I discovered I was not getting more autonomy. As I went up the chain, I was getting less autonomy. And I thought, oh, what a shame. My drive isn't going to be there. So those things came together for me to think, why am I doing this? And I came to that realization, of course, we're not going to get today back. Time's actually the most precious resource we have. And it's not renewable on your personal level. You can't replace the time that elapses. And so the point of money is actually to help you make the most of your time. It's just a tool. Whereas we've been taught just to keep going and make it as big as you can, actually, it just needs to meet your needs so that you can choose how you spend your time. And flipping it over so that you prioritize your time really makes it easier to save, makes it easier to invest, because whenever you spend frivolously, you're thinking, wow, I've just wasted my time that I spent to earn that money. So I found that really powerful to reframe it for me, and I hope it helps other people.
Really, thank you so much for sharing that. And how amazing to be able to get in touch with your meaning and clarify your own sense of what's a meaningful life for you so early in the game. And speaking of time, many of our listeners might be thinking, listen, I'm in my 40s, I'm in my 50s, the runway is getting shorter. Can I ever be too old to FITR?
It's a really important question. So as I said earlier, I think there's no problem with trying because you might get lucky. Okay. So, and I guess I always point to the example of my mother, who was a single parent raising two kids. She didn't have much money. She taught me about money, but she didn't have money to save or invest. She bought her first shares when she was 49 years old. Right?
Yes.
$500 worth of shares. Yeah. So if you're less than 49, don't give up hope. And she earned a lot less than I did. I out-earned her in my third year out of university. She only got into a six-figure income in her 60s. But what she did was save once she could and start buying conservative assets, you know, stocks and property. And she managed to get to financial independence in 14 years. So
wow.
She got there. Yeah, she got there at 63. Yeah. So getting there at 63 is really important because it's 2 years earlier than the retirement age in Australia, which was 65 at the time. It's now 67. But it gave her 2 years. And it turned out to be a really important 2 years because she unfortunately passed away when she was 70. So she got 7 years of feeling time rich. She got 7 years of being able to be her own master. It meant she could move from across the country, 4,000 kilometers away to be with me and my kids. I'm so grateful she got there. But it just goes to show you, you don't know how much time you've got. You've got to make the most of it. So use My Mother Fran as your inspiration. If you're sitting there in your late 40s or 50s going, I can never get there, it's possible. Again, the economy might work against you, but you don't know what's going to happen. None of us have got a crystal ball that'll tell you the answer. So you may as well take a shot.
Well, thank you, Fran. I'm going to think of you as I plot out my own FITR journey. I am inspired, I have to say. Lacey Filipich is my guest. We are going to money school. That is the title of her book. And it's all about reaching financial independence and being cognizant of being time rich as well, and, you know, weaving that into the equation. Why is your model, and I love how you describe this in the book, why is FITR, financial independence, being time rich, especially important for us women?
Well, I'm not sure of the stats where you are, but I can talk about Australia's stats, and I think it's a common story around the world. So first of all, on average, women in Australia are paid less. We have what's called a gender pay gap. And where I'm sitting in Perth, Western Australia, that's 22%. So women on average earn 22% less than men. Now, it is illegal to pay women and men a different wage for the same job. So don't think we're doing that. But what's happening is women are still the ones who take more career breaks. We are having babies or looking after parents who are aging. And so we miss out on some important earning years. So we're not putting money into our retirement funds, and we're not having as much capital to work with versus the average male. So we've got less to work with. So that's the hard part. So I think that's really important. And financial stress lowers our IQ by 13 points when you're worried about money. And women, because we earn less, are more prone to that. So that's it's just a circumstantial thing. It's not something to do with biology. It's circumstances and environment. So that's the first thing. We've got less to play with. The second thing that really worries me, and the stats here are horrifying, I think, is that 1 in 6 Australian women will be financially abused in their lifetime. So that means they'll have their ability to earn money restricted by their partner. Their partner might take out debt in their name without their permission. They might not have money to do anything they want to do. Their partners take it all and put it off into another account. Really horrible circumstances that hold women hostage. Yeah, awful. Exactly. I hate to think of the impact of this. Now, it does also happen to men, just at a much lower rate. So that's why when I talk about this, I like women to think about having enough money to choose their circumstances at home, to be able to leave if they want to. So often it gets called running away money, but I think of it as staying money, as in I could leave if I wanted to, but I choose to stay. And the only people who don't want women to have money are the ones who really want to be able to control them and say, well, you can't go because you haven't got the means. So that's why I'm really focused on women understanding these skills and making sure they understand they can do well with money. They're as good with money as men. So don't believe it if you thought you're not good with money just because you're a woman. It's not true. You can be fabulous with money.
And you can start at any age. And I really like that point about stay money. Just because you build up a little pot doesn't mean you're digging your exit door. And it makes the choice to stay, it feels like a stronger choice.
Yeah.
A meaningful
exactly.
choice.
Yeah, it's
all
empowering.
Right. It is, because you know that you're choosing. You're not there because you have to be there. And
exactly.
you feel there's no other option. Mm-hmm. You say financial independence is not essential to feeling, to thinking, feeling, and behaving like you are time rich. Now, why is behaving like you are time rich, maybe even before you get there, a good idea?
Well, I think about this concept of mini retirements as being quite important. So the traditional model is you're going to work for 40 or 50 years, then you're going to retire and you're going to live on whatever you've saved, possibly some support from the government. In Australia, we get an age pension, for example, and that's it. So you got this big chunk of working, big chunk of doing nothing. And because our lives are getting longer, that big chunk of doing nothing is getting much bigger. So why do we wait until we're old to experience that? I'd like to see us bring some of that into our youth, because having what we would call mini retirement, so breaks of, you know, a month to 12 months, sometimes longer, from working, allow you to have a different experience from just being in the grind all the time and just only getting those few weeks of leave a year. And I think that's really important for us to do when we're young, maybe even before you have kids or, you know, get all those responsibilities. And doing it in smaller chunks allows you to still keep your career going, still have an income, still be progressing, but you're not just leaving it till you're old and gray. So I think you can do that early, and I certainly did. All my mini retirements that I took before having children, so I had 5 mini retirements, which totaled nearly 2 years off over a 5-year period. So I took 3 to 6 months off at a time. I did those all before I was officially financially independent. Just having some savings can be enough to achieve that. You don't have to wait till you've got that passive income coming in from your assets. It makes it more sustainable. So if you can get to financial independence, you can do those more often. It's easier. It's less stressful. But I don't think we should wait for that experience because, again, I guess what I've seen is we don't know how long we've got. You've got to make the most of it. And if you've been sitting there grinding away for a decade and thinking, oh, I just need a break, try and design that. And I think of it as conscious lifestyle design. I think that's probably the most common way to think about it and a popular term these days. If you can be conscious about that decision and build it in, then you're going to have a better quality of life and better experiences, and why not give it a shot?
And you're going to have a full life as well. You know, often when we speak to FIRE experts, people wonder, listeners wonder, does this mean I have to have a really miserable existence in the now because I'm always planning about what's to come? And how do I impose that miserable existence on my kids? So can I achieve FIRE and be a mom and raise these kids responsibly? So how did you do it with kids in tow?
Well, that's been quite interesting for me. I haven't actually done what I'd call a mini retirement since having kids because it doesn't feel like time off. You know, I had my first child and had 18 months not working, but you're working. Let's face it, mums and dads are working hard looking after children. It's no holiday. So you can still take the breaks. It just doesn't feel like what I think of as a mini retirement. The way that we've worked it in my family, for example, at the moment, my husband's 3.5 years into being at home. So he resigned from his job in early 2019. And so he's nominally in charge of our household, but we still share lots. And the advantage of that is he's been around to take the kids to school, to pick them up, to do all the activities with them. So they have a very strong bond with him. And I feel very equal in our partnership. But I'm the only one who's working at the moment. Because I'm working by choice, I'm pretty happy about it. So it's not like I come home at the end of the day miserable because I've had a big day at the office. I'm like, oh, you wouldn't believe the exciting things I've done today. So the energy level around work is very different in our household to where I see a lot of people who feel like, oh, we need two incomes and it's such a grind and they come home tired and exhausted. So I think it shows my kids that work can be joyous and that it can be really fulfilling. Yeah, it's always perfect. I'm sometimes grumpy, but it also gets to see that both genders can have a crack at it. It's not a question of the mum has to stay home or the dad has to stay home. We can trade. So I think that's quite good for my kids to know there's options and they can choose whichever path they like, but seeing different ways to do it is really healthy for them.
Lacey Filipich is the award-winning author of Money School, and in fact, she's going to sit on the board of judges at the MAIA, the Money Awareness Awards, for this year. Tell us more.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. So this is a new initiative that got started in 2022. So I feel very fortunate to be the inaugural best book winner. It's very exciting. And it's led by Michael Gilmore, and he's got a team around him that are doing some fantastic work to bring to light these incredible projects happening around the world. So if you've ever thought, oh, we don't teach people about money well enough, guess what? There's some incredible work happening. There's lots of categories. There's not-for-profit, there's commercial, there's academic papers, it's all sorts of stuff. But it's basically if you're trying to make people more aware of money and to include them and make them feel educated, then you should be checking this out. There's some fantastic projects that came through. I have had such a good time looking at them and they're open for nominations right now. So if you do have a project that's in the area of financial literacy or educational capability, please consider getting into it. And if you are participating, reading a book, taking a course, seeing something at your kid's school, something like that, that you think fits that category, encourage the people who run that to nominate because we want to hear about it. We want to put it up in lights and I can't wait to see the amazing entries that are going to come in.
Well, I just love the whole concept of Money School. I love the book and it's been great speaking with you, Lacey. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Michelle. It's been a delight.
Lacey Filipich, her book is called Money School. And remember, you want to check out the Money Awareness and Inclusion Awards as well. Lots of great projects from last year, and you may have a project that you want to submit for worldwide acclaim this year. Good luck, everybody. This is Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Dan, it's back to you in the studio.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.